Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, coincidentally, we have another person who's been shortlisted for on Post Irish Book Awards, and that is Michael Harding joining us in studio to talk about his new book, which has been shortlisted. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
It's great to see you, because we've spoken a good bit over lockdown, but it's always been remotely.
I know. It must be about 2.5 years since I was with you in the flesh, Raymond.
It was probably on the telly.
Aye. Yeah, that's right. You're like a confessor, do you know? How long is it since my last confession, Raymond? And I do come to you, actually, and I do tell you everything.
You do?
Because you have a way of going on and listening. You're like a really good counsellor. And I do tell you everything. And then I'd be feeling much better when I'm going home. And the only thing is, I think there's nobody listening to us. There isn't anybody listening,
no,
is there?
No,
good.
Well, isn't that
just
the key?
The two of us in the room,
isn't
Ray?
That's the key, yeah.
That's the key.
A Cloud Where the Birds Rise is a lovely book. It's a beautiful book.
And it's the first time I can say it's a beautiful book. Do you know, you have to be modest about your own work, but I can really say this is a gorgeous book, and the reason it is because of the artist Jacob Stack.
Yeah,
illustrations right through this big fat book, and it really is a shout out to Jacob Stack, and congratulations to him to be on this shortlist. This is a beautiful, beautiful book.
It is a beautiful book.
Yeah, he's a beautiful artist.
So it's 8 years, I'm doing the calculations here, since Staring at Lakes hit our bookshelves.
Yeah.
And how many? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Is it? No.
No,
this
six.
Is the 8th. Is it? Right, okay.
This is 7th.
This is the 7th book.
Yeah.
Right, okay. And this is a sort of a greatest hits.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, if you were a singer, this would be your greatest hits compilation.
That's right.
Would it?
Yes, there's pieces, or it'd be the final report if you were like not well.
Right. Okay.
You know,
yeah.
It's like the final conclusion of evidence, the book of evidence.
Right.
Harding is not well. Definitely not well after 6 books. But I think that it was Ciara Dooley who would have probably made the real final cut of what wanted in it. And so for me, the interesting thing about the book was it was like coming at it as a new book, because everything reads differently and everything reads like fresh.
Mm.
And the links that are made in it are not the links that I chose to make, but somebody is kind of making a portrait of me. So there's a me in it coming out of this book that is new to me.
Yeah.
And that's a really good pleasure.
But you have written all these things in the past,
yeah,
Michael,
yeah.
And these are thoughts that you
have.
Yeah,
but you don't notice yourself saying things. It's like the fella who's going on and on about the one thing all the time. And if you tell him, you keep going on about football, and he says, I never talk about football. What are you talking about? So I talk about love.
Yes.
I realised that I've been talking about love for 10 years. I didn't realise that.
And for you, it's the sort of the meaning of life, the essence of life, love.
I think it is, yeah. I think when I read this book, I see that, like, it's the small catastrophes in people's lives that you hear when you're listening to people in accidental situations. That's what's beautiful. And I've done that, listening and writing them in memoirs for 10 years. Like, I have to give you even a recent one. It happened about a couple of weeks ago. But two women, and they were coming out of Curry's in Letterkenny, and they were so upset because one of them had bought a kettle and the top of it was too narrow to pour the water into. The other one was telling her this. Well, Lord God, the upset in them was serious about that kettle, right? And that's the kind of small lives we live. But they're really beautiful lives, and they're beautiful stories. And I became a kind of storyteller of small things.
And is
because
everything
about love, really?
Yes, but that's where does love come into that? Those two ladies coming out of Curry's.
Because who is she going to make tea for?
Yeah,
who is sharing her life? Who enjoys the late with her, and who goes out and makes and puts on the kettle at the break? Everything is about love. There's absolutely nothing in the universe that isn't. And I even think the more I try and read science, and I know nothing about science now, I'm not a scholar, but the more I read about science, the more I sense that there's a kind of a relationality in the whole of matter that is far more mysterious to physicists than they're telling us.
Mm.
And it's very beautiful, you know. When you think that, like, the things you're looking at, the tree you're looking at, for example, is 90% not there. Like, if you think about the atoms, you know, the electrons and the neutrons, like, it's 90% not there.
As in, there are gaps.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's actually present to you as a force.
Yeah.
as you know, the, like a force of nature, and that sense of presence, that there's some sort of hidden underlying force that actually holds everything together, like a frequency. That's, to me, that's love.
What about people who don't have love in their lives?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think maybe when you talk about love, you're talking from the, I'm talking from the experience that it's always something that's never achieved.
Okay.
So that I think it can be very black and white and say, well, I see those two people having a great time cuddling and laughing and being spontaneous and they're in love. Now I see another couple. Like when I was in East Galway, I mean, like 30, 40 years ago, I remember on a Sunday night, the local bar, everybody went to the local bar, and the local country people, the men had all been in white shorts. And they'd come in on a Sunday night with the lady wife, and they'd sit in couples, and they would order their drink, you know, maybe a gin and tonic for her, maybe a pint for him, and they'd be there, and there wouldn't be a word out of them, right? Not a word. They'd be looking straight out. And I was young at the time, and I was arrogant, and I was ignorant, and I used to judge them and think, you know, they're not having fun, are they? Yeah. Just sitting there saying nothing. And now I find, and that's where staring at lakes came from, I realised that as you grow older and you experience pain and wounds in life, your partner, the one you love, is not necessarily somebody that you're obsessed with, like talking to across the table every day. She or he is the one that you're kind of shoulder to shoulder with. You're in the silence with them.
They're a constant in your life.
Yeah. So you can never really be sure or name what love is, really.
You're probably a typical Irish man in that you're not a big fan of the public displays of affection, the PDAs, as they call them.
Well, I am, but I can't do it, right? I can't do it. I was brought up in what you'd call a non-touching family.
Right.
You know, a family where if you crossed your legs underneath the table and your foot accidentally touched a parent, you'd apologise, right? I remember when I was doing sociology, there was actually a term called non-touching families,
right,
as an analysis of nuclear families. And I thought, yeah, I think that's us.
I think it was most families, though.
And then you'd meet, and yeah, it was most families in Ireland.
Yeah.
And I love the way that young people, you know, the way they go, love ya.
Yeah.
Love ya. and because, you know, there's children in my life and you'd hear them gradually over, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years, it started, love ya.
Yeah.
And you'd be, yeah, sure. And then gradually you realise this is how you say it now.
Yeah.
And you say, you don't leave the room without saying,
isn't that wonderful?
Love ya.
And
it is absolutely gorgeous.
The hug has become important because of its absence over the last 18 months. The hug has become important because of its absence.
Yeah.
And you talk about, and there's a lovely piece in the book, I don't know which book it's originally from.
Yeah.
It's the extra hug when somebody's leaving to travel abroad.
Yeah. I tell a story about, it's actually a story of a once upon a time story. And I do once upon a time stories when I want to really hide the full identity of somebody.
Okay.
But it was a young woman who was leaving her mother and father. She was the only child, and she was leaving her mother and father in a country area in China, and she was coming to Ireland. And on her way, the stiffness that comes into people when they're leaving, we've all seen that stiffness at the airports where you're trying to suppress the tears. You don't want to be upset because you don't upset the child, that kind of stuff. And so you hold everything back, and there's a hug which is like, it's like really awkward and formal. It's like Brezhnev in the old days in Russia, or Boris Yeltsin or somebody, you know, trying to hug somebody else, trying to hug Ronald Reagan or something. And then in my little story, what happened was the father outside said, where you're going on the bus is going to be cold, you should take a cardigan with you. And she went back in for the cardigan. She'd already said goodbye to Mammy. And Mammy saw her walk back in the door. And you can imagine the way that Mammy would have thought, I'll never see that child again. And then, like 3 minutes later, she walks back in the door, forgot my cardigan.
Yeah.
And suddenly, all the formality is gone. And then you get the real hug.
That's the one. Yeah,
the real big hug. Yes, yes. Can I tell you a little addendum to that story?
Go on.
Because that story, I wrote that story one time in one of the books. And it ended up laminated, translated into Mandarin, and laminated on a wall in a house in China.
Right.
Because they were delighted to read the story
about
Mammy and the daughter. But that's 10 years ago. And that woman, elderly as she is, because she had one child, is now living in Ireland.
Right.
And she'd be listening to this today.
And she came
and she's not in the best of health.
Right, okay.
So I'm sending her love. She knows who she is.
Right.
And her daughter married a friend of mine. And they now have three grandchildren.
Right.
And granny sits there in the corner of the kitchen with the three little children.
And will she understand what we're saying?
She'd have limited enough English, but okay. It's better than it was, let's say, okay. 5 years ago.
So on your health...
Yeah.
So you like you've written
I'm
about
struggling.
Yeah, yeah. You wrote about your and you spoke about your heart attack.
Yeah.
And that was in the last book or the previous one? Chest pain, a man, a stent, I know, and a camper van.
I lose track. But look, I'm confused, right? I'm really confused as a human being, and I'm probably in a hard place or in a difficult place at the moment. In 10 years I've had everything from heart attack to colitis to a detached retina to the most recent one was what they call an arteriovenal fistula.
Right.
And it's a really nasty business that sends the blood from your artery into the wrong veins and therefore begins to really damage your nerves and your spinal area and all that. And they did a magnificent job in Beaumont this time last year, but it didn't work. Do you know what I mean? They did a successful embolization of the artery, but it didn't work. And then, so they had to go in and do open surgery in March of this year. And they now have it fixed. My heart just leaps with emotion for the amount of heroic work that you see when you're in hospital, and especially during that COVID time.
Mm.
But it leaves me with a situation that at some point you have to realise you're like an old car and there's bumpers coming off and there's fenders falling off. I'm falling apart. And you have to journey into that really in solitude and accept, you know, it is your destiny to grow old and it is your destiny to get
die,
more,
yeah.
to be more vulnerable.
Yeah.
And you begin to find that there's a richness in that, you know, that you're not as invulnerable as you used to be. And that the way that you are vulnerable with other people is an opportunity to be human as well.
It softens you.
It does. It does,
not
Raymond.
But you were soft.
I still am. I'm a...
Softened you more.
I'm not soft. I'm a hard owl.
Are you? You put a good facade, a soft facade forward then to the rest of us.
I do in a kind of a way. Like there's a soft side to me, but I don't have a spontaneity. And I know that there's a boring old frusty old male in me all the time.
Right.
You know, I can't get away from that. There's hair comes out of my ears.
Oh, what's your name?
It would turn anybody off, right? And I can't stop talking.
Listen, I'll get you one of those trimmers. They're great.
I have about three of them. Yeah, I keep losing the batteries and then I buy another one.
Right. Okay. I replaced mine recently.
I love them. Look, come here. Do not see me hair.
I did it yourself.
Yesterday for coming to Dublin.
You're talking about Ireland and you say for women the great disappointment is men.
Yeah.
For men it's practically everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you see, because I've read all your books.
Yeah, well,
what I like about this is that somebody, that lady, Kira, is it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
She has taken these and when you see them sort of on their own, exposed there on a page, they're very thought provoking. Whereas in the fullness of a book, you'd be reading through it and you mightn't, you mightn't have noticed
it.
Exactly. So for women, the great disappointment is men. For men, it's practically everything.
Yeah.
It doesn't say a lot about us as a nation, does it?
I think it's the truth. I think that we're living in a time of huge global transition and, you know, the future is feminist and there's a huge transition is being made and has to be made. And I think men are always trying to catch up with it. And you need to do your work as a man to be aware of where feminism is going and where legislation is going and where all sorts of stuff with young people is going. And I think you just have to, you know, get over yourself in your maleness and deal with the future.
Yeah, is it not equality? Is the future not equality?
Yeah, I hope so.
For men and women, you know.
Yeah, I hope so.
And I'm not saying that feminism necessarily rules that out. It doesn't at all, but that's what we should be aiming towards because for a long time, obviously the balance was imbalanced, if you like.
The imbalance was imbalanced and there's a kind of a journey happening and I think that everybody can belong to that journey.
Yeah.
like even a crusty old male like me can still belong in some way to the feminist future. I hope.
Right.
Sure, I hope you're around.
Now, the meaning of life. This is the meaning of life. Now, it's would you believe it or not, and you probably know this man, and I probably mispronounce his name, he's a Thay. You know what a Thay is, don't you? T-H-A-Y, a teacher, a Buddhist teacher.
Oh yeah, Thay is, yeah, of course.
Is a Buddhist teacher,
well,
isn't it? Yeah,
the Vietnamese man they talk of as Thay.
Yeah, Thich Nhat Hanh.
Affectionately, yeah.
Thich Nhat Hanh, have you ever heard of him?
I have, yeah.
So I'm only coming to it now. So for all of these years, we've been having these chats.
Yeah.
And you've been telling me about Buddhism and meditation and mindfulness and all that sort of thing. And I was sort of humouring you, to be honest with you.
but now I'm getting there.
It's going to take me quite some time, you know.
Yeah, but you're getting old, you see.
Is that it?
That's the point. You see, that's the big exploration. At a certain stage in your life, there's a journey to be made into the silence of old age and mortality, and it can be, I think, a beautiful journey. And I think all the ways that we pray, let's say, in institutional religions, we can let go of the institutions, but we can hold on to this prayerfulness.
Mm.
We really can. Mindfulness, prayerfulness. Thich Nhat Hanh is so beautiful, and bless him, he is so rich. And I do sometimes quote him, but like he says things like, you know, he says things like, this is accent stuff now, right? Even a flower is a very beautiful thing. And I do think, like, to listen to his voice and his accent, Vietnamese, but speaking in English.
And he's living in France.
I do think if he said it in a Cajun accent, it wouldn't work as well. Do you know? Do you know what I mean?
There's something beautiful about the exoticness
of his accent.
Yeah.
But he is absolutely one of the great teachers of our time.
But I think. And this is the problem for me, who's sort of an analytical mind, is that the simplicity of it.
Mm.
I'm finding it hard to get my head around. Is it that simple? Is it that straightforward?
I think in a scary way it is.
I think
in a scary way the ultimate conclusion is so simple. You know, love one another.
Yeah.
And yet the complexity is our soul. I have a friend now, an Islamic guy, and he tells me the soul is like, it knots up. So your body is the soul knotted up.
Right.
And that's fierce complex. So to unknot yourself is the complexity. And that's why we need help, we need therapy, we need languages that explain consciousness to us. But when you actually get there, it's as simple as sitting down and listening to somebody playing a hornpipe.
Mm.
And you suddenly realise all you were talking about for like 2 hours, and now you're listening to a man on a flute playing a hornpipe, and you're saying, but sure, this is it, this is the mystery of life.
Okay.
And of course it is.
And are you,
be here
are
now.
You completely present now? Because that's the thing, isn't it? No, you're not.
No,
Where are you in your head?
Like love. You know, it's always what we aspire to. You know, we name love because we're trying to be there. We name being here now. I do sometimes say, I have a podcast, by the way.
Yes.
I finally did it. It's on patreon.com.
Right.
And it's called The Laughing Buddha.
Right, The Laughing Buddha. The Laughing Buddha. Patreon.com.
Well, I made that name up like 3 weeks ago. But anyway, I constantly say, if you name the bird, you cease to experience the song. So you keep, we all try and talk about love. We all try and talk about the mystery of being here. But I do say, like, if you did it for 3 minutes a week, personally, you think I'm sort of meditating or something. Not at all. I'm sitting there going daft in my head and ideas flying around my head. But I'm trying.
You're trying. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
you're trying to be totally present.
Yeah.
In the now.
Yeah, and I think if you do practice, there is a kind of a karmic pattern that starts to happen at a certain point. That, you know, if you constantly see the negatives in somebody, you'll make it a pattern. But if you constantly see the positive in the world or in people, you'll actually make it a pattern. You'll find it easier to see the positive.
So is it a bit?
You're being here now and you practice all the time.
Because it's practice.
When you're with Ray Darcy, when you're on the bus, when you're just walking around the place,
that you
kind of be aware just that you're here without any naming of it or judgment
of
it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, right. And that thing which I do find works is the fake it till you make it thing.
Mm. That's really a very, very good point. It's the embodiment of your hope becomes the reality of your realised hope.
So
that's a real mystery, you know. That's amazing. That if you kind of embody the universe as you would have it in a strange way, I think you bring it into being.
Immediately people are shouting at the radio, what about the lottery numbers, Michael? I want to win the lottery. 19 million. I'm putting that out to the universe.
I knew a man who was able to tell the lottery numbers.
What?
He was a barman, again in East Galway. It was the same pub, believe it or not. People will know the pub that I'm talking about. And he's long dead, Lord Merson. But anyway, he used to say that he could tell the lottery numbers.
Right.
But the funny thing was, Michael, he said, they only come to me just like when they're being named. So it was always too late, actually.
Now, a cloud where the birds rise is the lovely, very attractive, very beautiful new book from Michael Harding and Jacob Stack. And it'll make you think. And it's one of those ones you can dip into and you can just look at the pictures if you want, if you like to look at pictures, and you can read and you can think and you can maybe change your life as a result. Michael, thank you so much. Love Michael Harding. He's just like a lovely sedative.
That's a great idea.
He has a calming effect on people.
A sedative. Yeah, save you taking a Panadol.
And love Michael. I live on the east side of Loch Allen across the lake in Ballinaglera.
How are you doing over there in Ballinaglera? Lovely to see you.
From Michael and Arigna. And Ballinaglera are during the intermediate football final in Carrigan-Shannon on Sunday. I bet you didn't know
that's
that.
That's a plug.
And pleasure to meet Michael at the door. Always welcoming and friendly from Owen, his Donegal postman. There you go.
Oh, Owen, how are you? Yeah. Good Jim Ratatu, and I hope they're all well in Donegal.
Now, mind yourself, and great to see you, and good luck with the book.
And the podcast.
Yeah, and the podcast. Yeah, The Laughing Buddha, wherever you get your podcast.
No, the Michael Harding podcast.
All right. Right.
The Ray Darcy Show.
You said The Laughing
Buddha. On RTE Radio 1.